you're sheltering in place, you're isolating yourself, and we want to talk about if that still makes sense. So we want to kind of take everything we've learned and throw it against the backdrop of who we are. You know, we both have had extensive classes in microbiology and biochemistry and immunology. We've studied this for each of us 20 years, and we take everything that we're seeing today and we put that against that backdrop and say, does this make sense? Are we following the science? We keep hearing following the science. What is science essentially? It's the study of the natural world through experiment, through observation. So that's what we're doing. We're studying the disease around us. We're making observations. We're doing testing, experiments to figure out exactly what's going on. Typically, you quarantine the sick. When someone has measles, you quarantine them. We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home. So some of these things, from what we've studied from immunology and microbiology, aren't really meshing with what we know as people of, you know, scientific minds that read this stuff every day. That means you have a 0.03 chance of dying from COVID-19 in the state of California. 0.03 chance of dying from COVID in the state of California. Does that necessitate sheltering in place? Does that necessitate shutting down medical systems? Does that necessitate people being out of work? And they have a 92% recovery rate. If you are indeed diagnosed with COVID-19, 92% of you will recover. So we're seeing millions of cases, small amount of death. Millions of cases, small amount of death. And the reason I'm making that point is because we're going to compare this to flu and say, is this significantly different from influenza A and B? And if not, why has our response been what it is? And we don't necessarily report all of our flu tests. We do thousands of flu tests every year. We don't report every one because the flu is ubiquitous. And to that note, we have a flu vaccine. How many people even get the flu vaccine? The flu is dangerous. It kills people. So just because you have a vaccine doesn't mean it's going to be everywhere. And it doesn't mean everyone's going to take it, because we see every year that we have a vaccine and I would say probably 50% of the public doesn't even want it. So just because you have a vaccine, unless you force it on the public, doesn't mean they're going to take it. And then when you bring up a system of lockdown, you automatically have to compare it to a system of no lockdown, Sweden and Norway. I'm Norwegian.
Norway has lockdown,
Sweden does not have lockdown. What happened in those two countries? Are they vastly different? Did Sweden have a massive outbreak of cases? Did Norway have nothing? Let's look at the numbers. Sweden has 15,322 cases of COVID. They did 74,600 tests, which is 21%, similar to the other countries, 21% of all those tested came out positive for COVID. What's the population of Sweden? About 10.4 million. So if we extrapolate out the data, about 2 million cases of COVID in Sweden. They did a little bit of social distancing. They would wear masks and separate. They went to schools, stores were open. They were almost about their normal daily life with a little bit of social distancing. They had how many deaths? 1,765. California's had 1,220 with isolation. No isolation, 1,765. We have more people. What I'm getting at is millions of cases, very small death. Millions of cases, very small death. This is what we're seeing everywhere. The next thing I wanted to talk about is the effects of COVID-19, the secondary effects. COVID-19 is one aspect of our health sector. What has it caused to have us be involved in social isolation? What has it caused that we are seeing the community respond to? Child molestation is increasing at a severe rate. We could go over multiple cases of children who have been molested due to angry family members who are intoxicated, who are home, who have no paycheck. These things last a lifetime. This isn't about a seasonal flu. These are things that will follow these people and affect them in a negative fashion for their life. And these are secondary effects from COVID. And these are for me talking to ERs, talking to my doctors, and talking to people across the country and finding out what they're seeing. Spousal abuse. We see people coming in here with black eyes and cuts on their face. It's an obvious abusive case. These are things that will affect them for a lifetime, not for a season. Alcoholism, anxiety, depression, suicide. I talked to Donnie Youngblood and various people in the community. I've asked them, how are things going? Suicide is spiking. Education has dropped off. Economic collapse. Medical industry, we're all suffering because our staff isn't here and we have no volume. These are all real things that I'm seeing every day. I don't read about this stuff. I'm seeing it in my clinics. We have clinics from Fresno to San Diego, and these things are spiking in our community. These things will affect people for a lifetime, not for a season. So let's make sure we're clear on that. So we've gone over the secondary effects. We've gone over the statistics. Now I want to compare flu virus. Is this significantly different? And I just got a little bit of data here. So deaths, per the CDC, 24,000 to 62,000 deaths each year. We had about 45 million total cases in 2017 with about 62,000 deaths, or a 0.13 chance of death from flu in the United States. As you know, our other numbers were 0.02. So the lethality of COVID-19 is much less. Now, you've got hotbeds of it in New York, but again, we went over the numbers, 0.1% chance of death. Widespread, small amount of deaths. It's similar to flu, as a matter of fact. If we follow the science, as we've been asked to do, I'm following the science. This data is generated by the CDC, World Health Organization. The testing is generated by what we have done here. So we are following the science. Now I want to talk about the immune system. Dr. Masihi used to teach for immunology. We both had years of microbiology, biochemistry, and virology studies. We've made it our life's work to understand this stuff. And here, I'd like to go over some basic things about how the immune system functions so people have a good understanding. The immune system is built by exposure to antigens, viruses, bacteria. When you're a little child crawling on the ground, putting stuff in your mouth, viruses and bacteria come in, you form an antigen-antibody complex. You form IgG, IgM. This is how your immune system is built. You don't take a small child, put them in bubble wrap in a room and say, go have a healthy immune system. This is immunology, microbiology 101. This is not something, this is the basis of what we've known for years. So what I'm seeing is when you take human beings and you say, go into your house, clean all your counters, Lysol them down. You're going to kill 99% of viruses and bacteria. Wear a mask, don't go outside. What does that do to our immune system? Our immune system is used to touching. We share bacteria, staphylococcal, streptococcal bacteria, viruses. We develop an immune response daily to this stuff. When you take that away from me, my immune system drops. As I shelter in place, my immune system drops. You keep me there for months, it drops more. And now I'm at home, hand washing vigorously, washing the counters, worried about things that are indeed what I need to survive. Let's follow the science. This is immunology, folks. This is microbiology. This is what we've combined together. We have 40 years of experience in this. This is common sense immunology.
So quarantining and social distancing is worse for us, you're saying?
It decreases your immune system. You can't build an immune system by, if someone has a reduced immune system, you hide them away because they can't build an immune system. If you have a normal functioning immune system, you need interaction. When a child's in a womb, you're in this protected environment. When you come out, you have almost no immune system. You develop that through touching your mouth, touching your eyes, virus, bacteria, immune response, IgG, IgM. This is how you build a strong immune system.
You think people are worrying too much?
Of course they are, but that's from media telling them to. I am telling them sheltering in place decreases your immune system. And then as we all come out of shelter in place with a lower immune system and start trading viruses and bacteria, what do you think is going to happen? Disease is going to spike. And then you've got disease spike amongst a hospital system with furloughed doctors and nurses. This is not the combination we want to set up for a healthy society. It doesn't make any sense. And to understand how diseases spread. For instance, nobody talks about the fact that coronavirus lives on plastics for 3 days, and we're all sheltering in place. Where'd you get your water bottles from? Costco. Where'd you get that plastic shovel from? Home Depot. Those are fomites and carriers of disease. So you take your family sheltering in a place that you think is safe, and you're taking fomites with disease that they've shown that lasts 3 days. Are you really protecting yourself from COVID? Does that make sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me. And if I swabbed things in your home, I would likely find COVID-19. And so you think you're protected, but you've got fomites coming from, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's. And it's okay for us to be mingling in those situations, but we have to not go to work. It's okay for us to go to Costco, but not to church. Do you see the lack of consistency here? From a microbiological, immunological standpoint, that doesn't make sense. If you're going to isolate people, you need to shut these all down, because that's how the fomites are being transferred. When you go to Del Taco and you get a plastic bag or piece on your burrito from someone not wearing a mask who is just wiping their arm on your thing, do you think you're protected from COVID? When you wear gloves that transfer disease everywhere, those gloves have bacteria all over them. I'm wearing gloves, not helping you. As your mask that you're wearing for days, you touch the outside of it, COVID, and then touch your mouth. This doesn't make any sense. We wear masks in an acute setting to protect us. We're not wearing masks. Why is that? Because we understand microbiology, we understand immunology, and we want strong immune systems. I don't want to hide in my home, develop a weak immune system, and then come out and get diseased. We have both been in the ER through swine flu and through bird flu. Did we shut down for those? Were they much less dangerous than COVID? Is the flu less dangerous than COVID? Let's look at the death rates. No, it's not. They're similar in prevalence and in death rate. So we are saying that our response now that we know the facts, it's time to get back to work. It's time to test people. But again, testing gives you a moment in time. Testing tells you, the nasal swab says positive or negative. The blood vial, the tiger top or the finger stick, gives you IgG, IgM. IgG being the long-term immunoglobulin we look at for immunity. But again, it's a moment in time. And what's interesting to me too is when someone dies in this country right now, they're not talking about the high blood pressure, the diabetes, the stroke. They say, did they die from COVID? We've been to hundreds of autopsies. You don't talk about one thing. You talk about comorbidities. Their vessels were narrowed. Their lungs were a smoker. COVID was part of it. It is not the reason they died, folks. It is one of many reasons. So to be so simplistic to say that's a COVID death because they have COVID, you know how many people die with pneumonia or people that die from flu? With flu, I should say. It's not from flu. Their lungs were compromised by COPD. They had a heart attack 2 years ago. They have a weakened body. We aren't pressured to test for flu. But ER doctors now, my friends that I talk to, say, you know, it's interesting. When I'm writing up my death report, I'm being pressured to add COVID. Why is that? Why are we being pressured to add COVID to maybe increase the numbers and make it look a little bit worse than it is? I think so. Basically, our conclusions are that when I look at the basic tenets that we know of microbiology, and I say, do we need to still shelter in place? Our answer is emphatically no. Do we need businesses to be shut down? Emphatically no. Do we need to test them and get them back to work? Yes, we do. The secondary effects that we went over, the child abuse, alcoholism, loss of revenue, all these are, in our opinion, a significantly more detrimental thing to society than a virus that has proven similar in nature to the seasonal flu we have every year. We also need to put measures in place so economic shutdown like this does not happen again. We want to make sure we understand that quarantining the sick is what we do, not quarantining the healthy. We need to make sure if you're gonna dance on someone's constitutional rights, you better have a good reason. You better have a really good scientific reason and not just theory. We're going to work diligently to find a vaccine. And the one of the most important things is we need our hospitals back up. We need our furloughed doctors back. We need our nurses back, because when we lift this thing, we're going to need all hands on deck. I know that the local hospitals have closed two floors. Folks, that's not the situation you want. We're essentially setting ourselves up to have minimal staff, and we're going to have significant disease. That's the wrong combination. So that's kind of the gist of what we wanted to get across today. And I've been working with some of the leaders, and I've talked to, you know, the head of the CDPH. I've gotten their opinion on this, and a lot of the leaders in Sacramento. And we're all in agreement, but we need to have Governor Newsom in agreement with us to lift this ban. I've talked to our local head of health, the health department, and he's waiting for that. Even though they're in agreement with me, they're waiting for the powers that be to lift, because the data is showing us it's time to lift. So if we don't lift, what is the reason?
No,
not at all.
Based on your information, would you say it's safe to open up schools, sporting events, and for people to gather outside again, including gyms?
Yeah, I would start slowly. I think we need to open up the schools, start getting kids back to the immune system. You know, and the major events, the sporting events, these are non-essential. Let's get back to those slowly. Let's start with schools. Let's start with Cafe Rio and the pizza place here, because I can go into Sully's right now, which I did this morning. There was 25 people in there, and I can stand in line for 10 minutes, but I can't go in Cafe Rio and sit there for 10 minutes. Does that make sense to you guys? And I can go into Costco, and I can shop with people, and there's probably a couple hundred people, but I can't go in Cafe Rio. So big businesses are open, little businesses are not. There's no science behind that. As we've gone over, that is not science. There's other factors in play that we don't have time to go into, but it's not science. I want to make that clear. And then eventually we treat this like we treat flu, which is if you have the flu and you're feeling fevery and body aches, you just stay home. If you have cough, fever, shortness of breath, COVID is more of a respiratory thing, you stay home. You don't get tested. Even when people come with flu, a lot of times we don't test them. We go, you have flu. Here's a medication. Or if it's been more than 2 days, you don't get Tamiflu. It works itself out. This virus is the same. You have COVID, go home, let it resolve, and come back.
So someone who would test negative for the antibodies, should they be allowed to go back to work?
They should, because they may be negative for the antibody for years. They may never get flu. We have people in their 50s who have never had flu.
So you're just saying anybody who doesn't have an active coronavirus infection should be allowed to go back to
Absolutely.
Work, whether they have the antibodies for it or not.
Right.
Okay.
This is too early. Scientific studies, double-blind clinical controlled trials take time, years. So we're doing the best with the data we have. I gave you the statistics. This is all common knowledge you can find online. This is their countries reporting to these different news entities. This is all common knowledge. This is not based on double-blind clinical controlled trials. Again, we've been studying microbiology for 20 years. This is our life goal in our 20s and 30s, 40s. This is what we do. We throw this information against the backdrop of knowledge. We both have degrees in this, and say, is this legitimate? I don't need a double-blind clinically controlled trial to tell me if sheltering in place is appropriate. That is a college-level understanding of microbiology.
That's next year. Next year, 2 years down the line, a lot of times in medicine you have to make educated decisions with the data that you have. I can sit up, you know, and in the 47th floor in the penthouse and say, we should do this, this, and this, but I haven't seen a patient for 20 years. That's not realistic. We're using the basic data that we have here, which we're happy to share with you guys. We have all the data. Your vitamin D levels go down. You're not outside. You're not, you know, your mood goes down. When your mood goes down, you're more likely to get sick. You get depression. Going outside is healthy. I mean, why can't you go to the park and walk around, but you can go to Home Depot and nobody's wearing a mask? It doesn't make sense. The inconsistencies and the incongruencies make no sense. That's the bottom line.
So when Governor Newsom says restaurants, after the stay-at-home order, you might see waiters and waitresses wearing gloves and masks and giving you disposable menus, you have to disagree with that.
No, it's not. We don't disagree with that. I mean, I think you can look at it from two different ways. I think if you're healthy and you don't have significant comorbidities and you're not immunodeficient and you're not elderly, you should be able to go out without any gloves and without a mask. I think if you are those things, you should either shelter in place or wear a mask and gloves. I don't think everybody needs to wear a mask and gloves because it reduces your bacterial flora. It doesn't allow you to interact with society, and your bacteria flora and your viruses, your friends that protect you from other diseases, end up going away, and now you're more likely to get opportunistic infections that are hoping you don't have your good bugs fighting for you, if that makes sense. One is, if we keep the economy shut down till October, what's going to happen? Homelessness is going to go up. People's lives are going to be ruined. And there's so many other secondary effects of COVID-19, which Dr. Erickson presented eloquently. I think you have to look at that, and then you have to look at what are we going to lose? Well, seasonal flu rises in October as well. What do we do every year with seasonal flu? Does everybody stay home? Did you stay home last year for seasonal flu? Did you, Tim? Did anybody stay home for seasonal flu? No, this is just like the flu. Because it's unknown, it's not. The flu has been killing people for 100 years, since 1918, since the massive pandemic. But the flu is just, we know what the flu is. It's familiar to us. So we're not scared of it. Oh, it's just the flu. I've had several patients in their 30s and 40s die in the ER when I used to work in the ER from the flu. Oh, it's just the flu. But if it's coronavirus, it's coronavirus. We all need to be scared. So it's because it's unknown. The unknown always scares us. So in my opinion, what are the risks? What are the benefits of social isolation? And we think that the risks of social isolation are too high.
These two doctors, despite their intelligence, they have an ulterior motive. What would you say to those people?
Talk to ER doctors who have no ulterior motive. They have the same viewpoint. There's a post today from a doctor from Wisconsin. I encourage you all to read it. I'll share his story with you. It is exactly what we're saying. And he eloquently displays, he's an ER doctor. He says, I'm walking into this war zone. Our ICUs are empty. I'm scared to go to my own place of work. There's no patients, but we have people in hazmat suits checking my temperature as I walk through the doors. He's like, something else is going on here. This is not about science, and it's not even about COVID. When they use the word safe, if you listen to the word safe, that's about controlling you. So when I talk to all my ER doctors who work in a hospital, no stake in the game, same opinion. That's how I'll answer your question. We all have the same opinion. So from what we've seen right now, it's time to open back up. The science says it is. The models we have been using from predictions to predict the amount of disease are not accurate. This information is accurate. It models the flu. Let's go back to work. That's what the data is saying. Not models. Data is saying that.
Would you say, though, that like a situation in New York City, that's not like a flu? I mean, the hospitals there are completely overwhelmed and swamped, and people, working in the ERs are dying from this. So, that's not just a flu-type situation, right?
Look at Italy in 2017. Hospital systems overwhelmed, people dying. Overwhelmed system from the flu. This happens from the flu. If you've been working in the ERs, I've seen multiple people, hallways full, people dying, news media there, stories going on from the flu. This does happen.
It does happen.
It's not just the flu. It's
no.
The flu. That's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean. People think it's just the flu. It's just coronavirus. What's the difference? You're used to the flu. You're used to saying it's just the flu. FLU, influenza, is something we've grown up with. You're used to it. You're used to it, right? If somebody commits suicide today, you're like, yeah, that person committed suicide. It's awful. Or if somebody dies today from the flu, they died from the flu. It's awful. Terrible. But we're used to it. We're not used to coronavirus. Not used to something brings fear. Human beings don't like change.
From the things that I've been reading, doctors working in the ERs in New York City, I haven't heard any one of them saying, oh, it's similar to a flu outbreak. They were pretty impacted by swine flu in New York City. Mm-hmm. But haven't heard anybody really say, oh, it's just like swine flu was. Have you?
They're getting hit hard. They're a hot zone. And we don't ride subways with, 1,000 people in a small car that are this close. They had reasons for the disease. And coronavirus is shown to be very contagious. Let's be clear. It is contagious. We're not saying it's not. It may even be, from what I've read, more contagious and spread more rapid. But the actual cause of death and the disease cycle is similar to what we're seeing from the flu, with more of a respiratory component. And they were screaming for ventilators. What percent of people die on ventilators? 80, 90%? Once you're on a ventilator, if you understand, you're in a bad shape. And they're screaming for 30,000 ventilators that they didn't use, right? They're screaming for a lot of things, 30,000, they used 5. How many 100% over did they order? How many hundreds of millions of dollars? Entire companies, GM, were forced to switch their production lines. For what? I'm saying the secondary causes of what we're seeing oil shut down. We have predictable negatives from lockdown, predictable negatives. Corona has unpredictable negatives.
I guess what I'm trying to cross-reference is I hear our president, I hear our governor say social distancing is working. And you guys are saying it's not needed. So I guess that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around. Like, why is that?
It was needed initially.
Are they lying? Are they lying?
It was needed initially. They actually, we both agree with exactly what they did initially because we didn't know. It was an unknown. Now it is becoming known. Initially, when you don't know something, you're extra careful because you're fearful. It's just like when you see a patient and they're very sick, you test for everything because you're scared. You're fearful. But then as you see more of those patients, you realize, hey, I know what to test for. Right? It's shotgun effect versus sniper effect, right? So initially when this data came out of a new virus that's lethal, they went all out. And I think that was appropriate. But now that we have the data, we're seeing that 96-97% of patients completely recover. And those four patients that die, they have over 90% comorbidities. Let's run through that one more time. Out of 100 people, if 96 do fine. The four that die, 90% of those four have comorbidities. Heart failure, emphysema, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. They're on immunomodulating medications. They're immunodeficient, HIV. These are the people that are dying. You get some healthy people that die, but that's an infinitesimal number. Tiny.
We're not saying we're right. We're saying, here's the data. Here's what we understand. It's not a you're right and you're a wrong thing. It's the way we interpret data. We work in the field, and some people that are not working in the field and still getting a paycheck have a different opinion. If you weren't getting a paycheck, you might have a different opinion. If you weren't getting a paycheck, if everybody in here is getting a paycheck, right? Cafe Rio is not. They've all been furloughed. Mm-hmm. When you don't get a paycheck, your opinions start switching.
Yeah.
If you were at home, furloughed, for the unforeseeable future, would you be excited about staying sheltering in place?
No, I mean, I completely understand. I mean, we're seeing this around the country now, I think, you know, that people are demanding that they be allowed to go back to work. And
well, it's also, it's at what point, who says what's safe? Are you smart enough to know what's safe for you? Or is the government going to tell you what's safe for you? Mm-hmm. Who tells you what's, as soon as they use the word safe, that means control. We know what's safe for you. You're too dumb to understand disease, you see. We know what's safe. And so they're going to use this model for different things. We got a bomb threat from China. Everybody stay in their home for 3 months. What? They are using this to see how much of their freedom can they take from you. And will you roll over and stay in your house? And it's working.